Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite Lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here with my good buddy, Sam and Seven Legend, who just celebrated a big old stream thing in a giveaway. Sam, I saw that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's right. So the winner of the giveaway decided that they wanted something different. And I just sent the order for the winner of the giveaway, and the stream went wildly successful, I think. And it turns out that a lot of people, A, like watching Mass Effect, and B, are also interested in Mass Effect gear, Mass Effect stuff.
Imagine that. So, crazy. Yeah. Who'd have guessed? Well, so let's talk about the show today. I know that last week we received some really good feedback about the episode. It was tragic learning about Joker's sister and dad and all of that. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, go back and listen to it. There's some really cool stuff that Sam dug up about what potentially happened to Joker's family. But we're moving on today. We're back to a side bonus kind of episode. We're back to the normal episodes. What are we talking about today, Sam?
Yeah, so we did get some positive feedback about that last episode. And I heard from at least two people that it was their favorite episode that we've ever done.
Wow. Do you think maybe it was all like the clips and stuff? It's always fun to hear stuff from the games.
Yeah, I think weaving the media in there probably helped. But it was also a big storytelling episode, I think. So that also helped. But, you know, this week, you know, it was certainly something that I think even a lot of other Mass Effect well-seasoned Mass Effect players had not heard before last week. But that's not going to be the case this week, because this week we are returning to the sensational starship, the frigate that's friggin' awesome, the Normandy SR2.
We already did an episode on the Normandy.
I know. But we discussed the Normandy SR1, and actually, we are going to be talking about the SR2. And by the way, I realized that we forgot to mention where the SSV and SR come from in the name SSV Normandy SR1. It stands for Systems Alliance Space Vehicle, and the SR is Stealth Reconnaissance.
That makes sense.
So, you know, while the SSV Normandy SR1 was quite the amazing prototype, it was destroyed when collectors hit Shepard with a surprise attack in the beginning of Mass Effect 2. So we've got to cover now the new model that Cerberus had built. And to be fair, the SR2 had even better upgrades to the original ship. And that's why when it becomes the Normandy SR2, it's a Cerberus ship. So it doesn't have SSV in front of the name. As Jacob Taylor, the armor officer on the Normandy said, on the Normandy SR2 said, the SR2 made a good ship better.
Yeah, I remember it feeling a lot bigger in Mass Effect 2. I mean, it's clearly not exactly the same ship. So what did they add to it?
As I mentioned, the Elusive Man had this ship built specifically for Shepard to take down the Collectors. And I'm guessing probably to preserve as much as they could of Shepard and who they are, including the setting in which they saved the galaxy one time already, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense, I think, because if you're an employer and you had this really great performer named Shepard who did their best work in a certain part of the office, but that part got destroyed, so, let's say from fire sprinklers going haywire. So when they came back to work, you have to have that part of the office rebuilt as best as you can.
Makes sense. I mean, highly unlikely, but makes sense.
Yeah. It's more like if you had like a VP at your company, uh-huh. And I don't know, like maybe they had a sink or something in their office for some reason.
Right. They're like, the bar's over there and my window looking out into the park next door is right here. And like all that stuff needs to be in the right place for them to feel comfortable in right. The space again. Yeah.
They had a sewage main explode and it just went through the office.
These pictures are wonderful. You're painting Van Gogh's in my mind.
Oh, yeah. I'm quite the impressionist. Anyway, as good or crappy as that analogy may be, that is kind of what
literally
happens.
Literally crappy.
Literally crappy, yeah. That is what happens with Cerberus and Shepard. And it actually, I just remembered that it kind of relates to this real-world theory called state dependency theory. It turns out that the reason why teachers have us sit in the same spots all the time isn't just to keep track of us uh-huh. and to know our names. It's also, there's some research behind it that when students learn a certain thing in a certain place, they can recall that thing better when they are in that place.
Right. Or in a physical state. So like if you are somebody who drinks coffee in the morning, then make sure you drink coffee in the morning, both when you're learning something and then also when you go take the test. Like being physically in the same environment and physically in the same state, like you're saying, state dependency, both. Yeah, that's absolutely a thing. My wife used to talk about that. She's a scientist. Like when she would study for things when she was doing her doctorate, she was like, I got to drink my coffee and then I got to take my coffee in the morning before the test and like make sure everything's the same. Yeah.
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 It's controlling the variables. And I think that would make sense why the Elusive Man, as questionable as he is, seems to have a scientific mind. And I think he would understand that we should make this state dependency as consistent as possible for Shepard if we want to replicate the awesomeness
right.
that is Shepard. So,
but there are some changes, though, like the same, but different.
Same, but different. Yeah. So basically, this is, of course, the Normandy SR2. It's where Shepard resumes their galaxy-saving quest by leading Cerberus' Lazarus cell. And yeah, isn't that interesting? Like, I never thought of it like that. But technically, Shepard is a Cerberus cell leader in Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the cell is the crew of the Normandy, which is technically the cell's headquarters.
Yeah, yeah.
That's super weird to me because I never considered it like, oh, well, like, I guess my headcanon for my Shepard was always that that he reluctantly went along with things, that he wasn't like gung ho, like I'm a cell leader in Cerberus and this
right,
is my
right.
official.
Well, he never says that, right? Like he never like, oh, I'm going to call from Anderson. I'm going to remind him that I'm now a cell leader for Cerberus. Like,
yeah, it kind of seems like Shepard is constantly forced to renounce their partnership with Cerberus at any turn. Right.
Justify it, renounce it.
Kinda, right.
You know, do a funny little dance. It's fine. They don't control me.
I'm in control here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heads up, if you ever have to say that, chances are you probably aren't.
Yeah, right.
But it was just interesting to me when I was researching this that there was literally a name for the cell that Shepard was leading against the collectors called the Lazarus cell.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. The Lazarus, he was resurrected. It's kind of on the nose. Yeah.
So Shepard was resurrected, but of course the Normandy was too, kind of, not really.
Remade from the ground up in the same image of the other. I mean, they're both in a way resurrected. For anybody who doesn't know the call out, Lazarus was from the New Testament. Jesus resurrected Lazarus after Lazarus. He couldn't get to him before he died and was brought back from the dead.
Right. And also some strong Bionic Man vibes too. We can rebuild him better, faster, stronger than he ever was before. So you remember how expensive we said the SR-1 was?
Yeah.
For the Alliance. I think, if I remember correctly, 120 billion credits.
Right. The equivalent of like 10 coffees at a Starbucks today.
Yeah. Or a Frappuccino and one of their overpriced breakfast sandwiches. What's up with that? Seriously.
I mean, I think everything's going up in price lately, but... You know,
what's the deal with airplane food?
Right. All of a sudden this turns into Seinfeld.
Yeah, exactly. That was my lackluster Seinfeld impression. I told you I was an impressionist.
Yes, you did. Oh, man. The jokes are just merging together at this point.
Yeah, they're very, very interwoven at this point. Well, anyway, on the note of it being expensive for the Alliance and how it took all that work and ingenuity from both the Alliance and the Turians, well, the SR-2 was apparently even costlier. Even though they developed it based off of schematics from the original Normandy, which, by the way, how did they get those?
I mean, it's Cerberus. Nefarious ways? Like, nefariously? Is that a word?
Certainly unsavory tactics, I would imagine.
I would think so. And it would make sense. I mean, it's a bigger ship, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And the original one was blown to bits, and a lot of it disintegrated when it was entering Alkara's atmosphere. So the Alliance definitely had to have visited that site, the crash site, and scrubbed it for all the classified data. So basically, they either got the designs because the Elusive Man and Cerberus got to the crash site first and happened to find a terminal in well enough working order to recover the entire ship's blueprints from it, or they had someone on the inside in the Alliance beforehand.
Yeah, or maybe both.
Or both.
They might have been able to get some info from the crash site and then also corroborate it with info they got from inside the Alliance through connections. It totally makes sense. It could have been a combination of those things.
Yes. But about the specific differences in the Normandy. The first and largest thing I think anyone would notice is that the SR-2 is twice the size of the original stealth ship. I mean, you already mentioned it, that it felt bigger. Mm-hmm. It's literally double the size. So, yeah, you could say that. How big is the SR-2?
How big is it?
How big is it? According to the art director, Derek Watts, it is 170 meters long. That's, for our American friends, 557 feet.
Wow. Okay. So it's like almost two football fields?
Yeah, it's like a football field and a half.
Yeah.
And for our European friends, that's the same measurement in soccer pitches.
Okay. There you go. That's significant. That's a large ship.
Yeah. You know, our European friends are going to hear that, oh, it's 1.5 football fields in length, and be like, Americans really will use anything but the metric system.
Yeah, which I posted about today on Twitter, and I was
I saw that.
I'd be fine with us. The joke was, once the boomers are all dead, maybe then we can switch to the metric system, everyone? And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I'm cool. Anybody else? Okay, with it being that much larger, that means it needs even more power, right? Like, that was a big deal with the SR-1, was the power requirements.
Yeah, that's right. And so here's how the SR-2 gets around. For primary propulsion outside of FTL travel, it uses anti-proton thrusters. Antiprotons are in, and this next part is directly from the Codex, explaining how these antiproton thrusters work. Think of them like the jets at the back of the Normandy.
Right.
Antiprotons are injected into a reaction chamber filled with hydrogen. The resulting antimatter annihilation provides unmatched motive power. The exhaust of antiproton drives is measured in millions of degrees Celsius. Any vessel caught behind them will melt like wax in a blowtorch.
So, okay, so if you know anything about science with like protons and antiprotons, this is like antimatter and antimatter, right? The two things cancel each other out, but they also release energy when they do so. They're using that energy in order to create thrust, which comes out at millions of degrees. Millions of degrees.
That's pretty hot.
Yeah, dude, I bet this thing gets like 0 to 60 in like 0.00001 second.
It literally takes negative time. It was already there.
It goes back in time in order to speed up. Also, man, the whiplash. Whew. Make sure you're strapped into your seats.
If it affected the mass at the same time and it affected it enough, it literally would take negative time.
That's intense.
But... you know, remember how we commented on how big and cutting edge the Tantalus drive core in the SR-1 was?
Mm-hmm.
How Joker said it was this beast and threw off the balance, but ultimately he could handle it? Well, the SR-2's drive core is almost three times the size of the original drive core.
So
which
not
was
double.
Already massive.
Right, three times.
So now it's three times the size. And even though the ship is two times the size, the new drive core is three times the size. But that makes sense because power equations aren't always linear, you know, thanks mm-hmm. to entropy. A lot of power is lost to heat and different things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, like, yes. In fact, I wouldn't have been surprised if you said like four times the size because things, a cubic movement rather than a I don't know what the other one is, square.
Linear.
A linear yeah. movement, yeah. Increase in power. So three times seems reasonable for what little I know about engineering and power.
And I think I had commented on that last time we were talking about the Normandy, when I said, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it required exponentially more power.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't quite sure, but then I confirmed it when I was researching for this episode. It does require exponentially more power, but I digress. You may be wondering how the drive core gets its power. Well, the short answer is a nuclear fusion reaction. And it does require ESO, of course, but there is a new nuclear fusion reactor in the ship as well. And in the event that it goes down, there are hydrogen fuel cells that can be used to power essential functions.
And if those go down, they've got like 100,000 little rodents on treadmills.
Yes, and that's where Shepard's space hamster comes from.
Right. Yeah, different kinds of variety of rodents. Hamsters.
Yeah.
Mice. Rats.
Shepard just snagged one from the hamster wheel and said, you're mine now.
This one's mine. I like this one. It's spunky.
Everyone else was like, that's kind of weird, but do you, man.
All right. And if we don't happen to get enough power, that's on you, buddy.
Yeah.
We lack the one wheel, one rodent wheel worth of power to get out of the situation. Shepard!
Commander, we're going down. Commander, we're going down. We need the space hamster.
Quick, get the space hamster out of Shepard's apartment. Quick, we're not going to make it.
Someone has to sneak up there. I'm not going to be the one to tell the commander that we need the hamster. That can be you.
Yeah.
It's not going to be me.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have a nuclear fusion reactor. Remember those fuel cell upgrades that you can get from Samara, or I guess if you're a psycho and recruited Morinth.
What? I mean, I recruited. Fine. Yes.
I was curious what they actually do when it comes to the science of the series. And it turns out that it uses a fuel that burns at a far better efficiency than the standard H2O2 mix that it uses. I'll spare the technical explanations, but basically it means the ship uses less antiprotons to get around.
Yes. That's what I would have said too.
So it's like changing out the engine and exhaust components from a car built in the 80s with one built now. You're going to get a lot better miles per gallon.
Yeah. Efficiency increases. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But this huge increase in size also creates a problem for the SR2's maneuverability. You remember how we said frigates are the largest ships still able to land planetside?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we see Joker use the SR-1 to land on or approach planet sides on a couple of different occasions. Eden Prime, Vermeier, Ilos. But have you ever wondered why we don't see that in the SR-2? You ever wonder or ask why that ugly cockroach-looking shuttle is now necessary at all? Because it is such an affront to the eyes? This is why. The SR-2 is just too large to land planet side. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we'll have to do an episode on that, on the UT-47 Kodiak shuttle.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you get to, you know, football field and a half size ships, the aerodynamics on that seem a lot more sketchy.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, when we had talked about the Normandy the first time, we went over exactly what is a frigate. And part of the defining feature of frigates was that they were smaller than cruisers enough to the point where they could land planetside. And I had seen someone in the Mass Effect Lorecast channel on the Robots Radio Discord had brought up that, you know, is the Normandy SR-2 still considered a frigate? And right. It is considered a frigate, but I heard them out because basically they were saying it's large enough that it cannot land planetside.
Mm-hmm.
It has impressive armaments that we'll talk about in the second half of this episode. Its armaments are so impressive that they're worthy of being called a cruiser.
I wonder if it's one of those like weird things, especially because it was manufactured by not somebody who was part of the original organization that uses those classifications, that it somehow has moved into this kind of middle space where like it doesn't have an official designation, but if you actually looked at the details, maybe it is more in line with a cruiser at this point.
And a lot of the changes that Cerberus made when they made it bigger, a lot of those changes were just due to livability and comfortability factors,
right.
Which, of course, the military isn't concerned with. The military is concerned with efficiency, speed, and getting the biggest bang for their buck. So it's not surprising that I think Tally says in the first game, it's amazing you shoved such a huge drive core into a compact space. Like, yes, they were trying to make the ship as small as possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, okay, yeah. Cool. Interesting stuff. And I guess maybe we'll have to do an episode on the UT-47 Kodiak.
Yeah, at some point. I think there's enough science behind it. Maybe it'll warrant one of those bonus episodes that we've been doing.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's time for a mid break, and we're going to take a minute to go thank our patrons, and then we'll be back to talk about more of the armaments and other details about the SR2, so don't go anywhere.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show, and we get to thank our newest patron, Bonesies. Bonesies? Is that how you pronounce it? Am I saying this right, Sam?
I think so. I think it's Bonesies. That's how I read it anyway. But thank you, Bonesies.
Bonesies. I totally goofed that. Thank you so much for signing up on the Patreon. And thank you to all of our other patrons for being here. I think we thanked Rain last time, did we not? I believe
not
so.
Not sure, but...
Rain!
No harm in two thanks.
Double thanks, just in case. But then we've got... Let's see. Oh, man. We've got a bunch of shepherds to call out. Kolka Shins, Captain Shanko, Kira, Lieutenant Tosino, Pipe Man, Rain, and Big Bills. Thank you so much for being our Tier 5 Shepherd Tier patrons. And a reminder to everybody who is Tier 4 or higher that next week, and it's the 20th right now as we record this, so the 27th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern is our patron show, our chat show. So if you're able to join us, we'd love to have you on if you're tier four or higher. If you aren't yet a tier four or higher and you'd like to either sign up or upgrade to join us next week, we'll be doing that as well. I'm not sure that we've decided a topic yet. Sometimes there's some chat that goes on about this. So I don't know that we've landed on one yet, but who knows? If you want to jump in there, please feel free to throw out some ideas. We'd love to hear what you guys want to discuss, and see you guys next week. And then we also have a rating and a review, or two new reviews to read. And oh, before I say that, where you can sign up is patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. So go check it out, see all the different stuff you can get. And then our reviews, we've got two new ones that came in, but we're going to hold those for the next episode, because we're going to knock out a second episode this week as we record these. So stay tuned for that. Anything else you want to say before we move back to the rest of the show, Sam?
Just that I've been keeping up with how many ratings that we've been getting on Spotify and subscriptions we've been getting on YouTube. And if anyone wants to help us out and you don't have the funds to put toward a Patreon, that's totally okay. Like we've said, word of mouth immensely helps. And if you're okay with doing something as simple as clicking a button, please leave a rating on Spotify and subscribe on YouTube. Because when we hit those 1,000 subscriptions on YouTube, we can actually monetize.
Yes. Yeah. And YouTube does this thing, or at least seems, I know they were going to do this thing. I haven't confirmed if they do it yet, where they're going to put ads on videos from channels that even aren't hitting monetization yet. So by helping us get there, it means that we at least get a little bit of cut of the ads if they show up. So we would appreciate that. But we'd also love you having, you know, have you as a part of the community and able to see our physical faces, because we're the most handsome guys you've ever seen. And we don't want to keep that from anyone.
Lots of smart people are saying that. Very smart people.
Mm-hmm. All the smart people. Well, the smartest people with the best tastes are telling us that we are the most handsome people on the internet.
No one speaks in hyperbole like me.
Yeah.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
I don't know where that transition came from out of nowhere, but it seems like we're back to the rest of the show. So, Sam, what other upgrades did Cerberus make to the SR-1?
A few notable ones, not the least of which was a faster elevator. Thank fuck.
I want a mod that just mods in the girl from Ipanema as the elevator music every time you're in an elevator and forces the elevator to last the entire duration of the song.
Can you remind me what song that is again?
It goes, goom, goom,
goom, goom, goom, oh my goom, god, goom, no. Goom, no. Some of those elevator rides may as well be that.
Yeah, it is the Bossa Nova song.
Okay. Yeah. So yes. we've all heard it.
You've all heard it. It's everywhere.
So you know, a few notable upgrades, notable changes, I should say, because the worst of which, in my opinion, was no more Mako. Sad face. There was no more Mako.
No more Mako.
SR2. And some people were okay with that.
But I mean, it does drive a little wonky, but...
Yeah, but, you know, what did we get instead? Instead, we got the M44 Hammerhead, a floating tank made of tissue-thin armor. What the hell is that? I personally don't consider that an upgrade at all, but... That's one of the other.
I mean, you know, tomato, tomato.
Yeah. I know that some people do like the M44 Hammerhead. And to those of you who do, I ask you to get better taste. I'm kidding.
We're going to get all the letters now.
I'm a Mako enjoyer thoroughly, and I'll die on that hill, I think. But of all of the areas of the ship that were previously there, they feel larger. And Cerberus also made some ergonomic upgrades that I mentioned before the break that improved comfortability and livability. The kitchen and improved med bay come to mind, as well as Joker mentioning the new leather seats. Can't find that level of ergonomic furniture in an Alliance defense vessel. So it makes sense since they're private and not beholden to taxpayer budgets.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, nice amenities.
Yeah.
It was ironic about this is that it was designed by Cerberus, and the Elusive Man has a terrible chair.
He spends all his money and his thoughts and tears and all on seats for everyone else, I mean, not for him.
That's the other mod I want, is a mod that takes out that stupid looking hard bench that he sits on, whatever that thing is, and replaces it with like one of those really high back leather chairs that you would like sit in with a smoking jacket in your den. Is brown.
He's got a,
with it, little it buttons.
Wouldn't make much sense, but he really does need a fireplace in that.
Yes. A little carpet on the ground, a comfy leather chair, kicks his feet up with like a little manufactured fireplace just next to him. I want that mod.
Yeah. Here's the elusive man as everyone's favorite dad.
Yeah. Like your grandfather's like smoking room. His den or library or whatever he calls it.
There are some other cool quality of life upgrades in the SR2, and one of those is the captain's quarters. This one is probably my favorite jump from SR1 to SR2. It's because who doesn't really like having their own room in space? Room in space, even
space room.
Literally.
Yeah.
Especially with the semi-customizable parts, like the fish tank.
The fish tank's the best part.
Yes. Who else is going to kill my fish except for me?
Right. And then the little models that you display.
Yes, the model ships. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, at the time when this game came out, having small customizable areas in the game that truly felt like yours, that was a new thing.
And it was also very limited. Like, if this came out today, you'd be able to change, like, the color of the walls, the type of furniture, where you put the bed, where you put the fish tank, you know, like, all of that stuff. This has, like a few little things here and there you can customize, but otherwise is exactly the same as anybody else's.
Yeah. And maybe we've become spoiled or something. I don't know. I think we have.
Too much Animal Crossing. That's what it is.
Yes. Let's blame Animal Crossing.
Yes. It's all Animal Crossing's fault. Tom Nook.
They don't get nearly enough blame. I mean, though, from a gameplay perspective, the SR1, it did kind of feel weird because it didn't feel like there was anywhere for anyone to sleep.
There is that.
Let alone the captain. I mean, there was this small room, technically, that's not used for literally anything at all in the game, except for supposedly being the captain's quarters.
Is that like your headcanon? Is that like you just kind of, everybody squeezed in that room all at the same time?
It was, everyone took 20-minute shifts of sleeping.
Oh, okay. So I'm thinking it's like a dog pile. Like you have, when you have a bunch of like puppies and they all snuggle, like puzzle piece together. You know, like on the floor.
Yeah.
It's like that.
There were the sleeper pods, you know, so I don't want to get things confused. There were the sleeper pods, and I understand that that's, you know, where people were supposed to sleep or something like that. And I'm sure the codex explained it better than I am right now. But for the captain's, for the purpose of the captain's quarters, that room was so dreary, and it just did not feel like enough. It felt more like a jail cell than it did a captain's room.
Yeah.
And I think we're lying to ourselves if we're saying that we didn't want something lavish and awesome for the commander. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a welcome upgrade, in my opinion, in the SR2. And then speaking of where people would sleep, in the SR2, it's much more easily accessible, the crew quarters. And you can also overhear a lot of unique dialogue between the crew members of the SR2 in there, sometimes talking about their families and the colonies and things, places being hit by the Reapers. Or not the Reapers, the Collectors. There's also the life support room where Thane likes to hang out.
Yeah.
Because of its climate.
Right. Right.
And a lot of people's favorite romance lines delivered in that room.
Right. And then Jack under the stairs.
Jack being under the stairs.
Yeah, I always thought that was a little weird. It's like everybody found their part of the ship that made the most sense for them. But yeah, Thane got that funny weird room that was, it was like, okay, that's weird. He hangs out in here, but whatever. Okay.
That's just the swamp monster. He hangs out in the life support room.
I guess that's fine.
Don't worry. If his eyes gloss over, he's just remembering things from his life in vivid detail. You know, if I explained this game to a lot of people who don't play video games, I think they would probably ask if I'm seeing a counselor.
This is counseling. That's what this you need is to, counseling. You need to look them dead in the eyes and go, this is my counseling.
Yeah. You need to get with it or get lost.
Why aren't you playing these games? Maybe you need counseling. There you go.
Valid counterpoint.
Yeah. Always turn it around on them. That's my motto.
Just turn it around on anyone.
Why were you driving so poorly? Why were you driving so poorly? I'm the police officer here, sir.
I was chasing you. Yeah. Anywho, there's also the port and starboard observation rooms, which are pretty cool. You know, I think for me, the observation room where Samara takes up residence is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that should be like the captain's room, right?
Yes.
Like, what the heck is with that?
It's a huge glass window looking out into the void of space. It's so awesome.
Right, like, right. And then the captain's room feels like a little closet on the top floor compared to that thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets a little tiny skylight in the in the very right above his bed, so you can gaze out just enough to know that you are trapped in a metal vessel flying through the void of space.
Right, right.
There's also a bar in one of the observation rooms, one of those sides, which I thought, you know, when I was researching this and doing the notes for this show, I was like, there's no way in hell there would ever be a bar on an Alliance-made ship.
Oh, yeah, totally. But in Star Trek, they get bars.
Oh, do they really? Yeah. I didn't watch Star Trek that much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the Enterprise, there's like a whole restaurant and bar. And people go to the bar after they're done their shifts and they have drinks and hang out with each other. It's totally a thing.
That sounds a lot better. Yeah, there was nowhere for the staff and personnel on the SR-1 to kick back and relax. But there's also the expanded armory. In the SR-2, it's given its own room on the second floor and has what you'd expect, a lot more guns. A lot more guns, certainly, than what Ashley had to work with, which was weird because she was technically the armor specialist there. Along with that is Morden's research lab, which both additions, the research lab and the expanded armory, they really help the SR-2 feel more like a fully self-sufficient mobile headquarters.
Right. Yeah, and you could go into each of the rooms in order to address certain things on each mission that made more sense to talk about in a research lab or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. The only thing that apparently shrunk is the cargo hold, because the cargo hold, it really only has like two areas with Zaid and Grunt's rooms. And there's a wide cut out of it that overlooks the hangar bay where the shuttle is stored. So the cargo hold has seemingly shrunk, but then there's the hangar bay below that, which is used for utilitarian purposes. And of course, the room where all the calibrations happen, the main battery, that's where Garrus tells us all the time that he's too busy to flirt with us.
Right. Yeah. He's always too busy and rejecting us. What's he even doing in there?
He tells us he's calibrating the Normandy's main cannons.
Right. Yeah,
that's what he tells us.
Yeah, that sounds like code for something.
If he is to be believed, you know, this might actually be true though, because the SR-2 has some serious firepower upgrades over the previous one, and now we're getting to the part that I think everyone was waiting and wanting to hear about: the defensive systems of the Normandy. Mm-hmm. Well, Cerberus adds Javelin Disruptor torpedoes to the Normandy's arsenal, which use dark energy and mass effect field warheads to literally shred targets apart. They are powerful enough to destroy collectors' cruisers on multiple volleys. And according to the Codex, the way that Disruptor torpedoes work, not just Javelin ones, but the way that all disruptor torpedoes work, is that they use this mass-increasing field while in flight, making them too massive for any enemy kinetic barriers to repulse. The extra mass gives the torpedoes a very sluggish acceleration, though, and it makes them easy prey for defensive guardian weapons, lasers. As a result, torpedoes have to be launched at very close range.
So it's like the equivalent of throwing something the weight of the moon, but in a very, like, compact shape.
Yes.
Yeah. So, which is crazy to think about, because that would just punch right through anything.
Like a cannonball that weighs, like, a million tons.
Right.
Yeah. And firing it extremely hard, but because it weighs so much,
it takes a lot to accelerate it. Yeah.
And you know, as if that wasn't badass enough, to rip through someone's shields and then heavily and damage and shred the target apart because you've created this mass effect field that just the physics behind it are awesome. But if that wasn't bad enough, if you install Garrus's proposed upgrade, the Normandy gets a Turian-made cannon that is literally a miniaturized version of Sovereign's main gun.
Okay, this is crazy.
Yeah. Right? That's pretty boss.
Yeah.
It's a mini Reaper gun on the Normandy.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize this until I really dug in and looked at the description of the Thanix cannon. But here's what the Codex tells us about the cannon. Turian volunteers were helping clean up the debris after Sovereign attacked the Citadel. But they were not just volunteers, they were secretly working with the Office of Technological Reconnaissance. And they were salvaging the main weapon of Sovereign and its massive Ezo core. Here's something I didn't realize before that the game tells us in the same breath. Sovereign's laser is no energy beam at all. Its massive Element Zero core powered an electromagnetic field suspending a liquid iron-uranium tungsten alloy that shaped into armor-piercing projectiles when fired. The Codex goes on to say the jet of molten metal accelerated to a fraction of the speed of light, destroys targets by impact force and irresistible heat. So not a laser beam.
So it's like a thread of ultra-heated metal.
Yes.
Being shot at like almost light speed.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
wow.
Like incredibly hot liquid metal propelled at a fraction of the speed of light.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
That's
and it
intense.
Just rips through things.
Right. That's why it looks like a laser, but it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that is the technology which the Thanix cannon is based off of. It's very similar to on a smaller scale. So less than a year after the Battle of the Citadel, the Normandy gets a gun that's probably more fitting of a cruiser than a frigate, although the Thanix can also be mounted on fighters.
That's
on fighter
nuts.
Jets.
That's crazy.
And it's like a Reaper gun.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So that it makes a lot more sense when if you also upgraded the Thanix cannon on the Normandy, I think most people did, then in that final fight, you see that thing go off and it just rips through things. And you're like, this makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Another defensive system that's upgraded are the barriers. Cerberus doesn't really initially improve the Normandy SR-1's existing kinetic barriers all that much, but Shepard can acquire blueprints from Tally for something called Cyclonic Barrier Technology. And that sends its defensive capabilities into the next league.
I just have to point this out in chat real quick before you move to the next sentence. Jay Lonnie in chat says, Fighter Gerber.
Yeah, fighter go more like deafening. Like, yeah.
Or whatever
that
sound
was. The resources to equip enough fighters, maybe the 12,000 fighters that Rear Admiral Mikhailovich said could have been made with the Normandy's credits. If they had enough resources to equip all of those fighters with Thanix cannons, I don't think the Reapers would have been any problem.
They would have stood a much better chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of tiny, powerful guns. The Cyclonic Barrier Technology. So basically, what is it? It's typical barriers have a hard time with disruptor torpedoes because, like we mentioned, they add mass and they make the projectiles a huge kinetic energy blast. which the barriers cannot just withstand a direct hit from. But the cyclonic barrier technology, it according to the Codex, it violently slaps aside rather than halting incoming linear force. By rotationally firing their mass effect fields, field projectors, ships create rapidly oscillating kinetic barriers instead of static ones. Shooting through the CBT is like trying to shoot at a target inside of a spinning ball.
Weird. Okay. Or, like, if you were trying to poke my eyes, but I kept doing this with my hands. Like, moving my hands back and forth in front of my face. So they were, like, slapping your hands away before they get to my head.
It'd be a lot more effective than just keeping your hands stationary over your eyes.
Right, because, I guess if you weren't using fingers, if you were using knives, the knives would eventually pierce through your hand and then get you in the eye. But if I'm moving my hands back and forth, I might slap the knife out of your hands. And then I don't get stabbed at all.
So
very scientific, I know.
Very scientific. That's some highbrow concepts that I'm not sure everyone's going to understand.
Yeah, you definitely need to go to the Mass Effect YouTube page to see my wonderful physical representation of what I just talked about.
You would think that, okay, well, if that cyclonic barrier technology got damaged in any way, that could probably throw mass effect fields in an irregular pattern rotating around the ship, which could cause a lot of problems. But I looked it up, and apparently, according to the Codex, if it does get damaged in that way, it has this safety shutoff mode where it defaults to normal barrier.
They thought about everything.
They did. They really thought about everything.
Yeah.
And of course, there's also the Asari-developed Solaris armor for the ship that is, quote, unsurpassed in strength because its central material, which are carbon nanotube sheets woven with diamond chemical vapor depositions, no idea what that is, but it sounds cool as hell, are crushed by mass effect fields into super dense layers able to withstand extreme temperatures.
It means they basically just manufactured bones. It's carbon. It's diamond bones. The ship has a diamond bone carapace.
The ship literally has a diamond skeleton.
Yes.
Like Shepard can get the adamantium.
Like an
skeleton,
insect,
basically.
But like on the outside, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of I think the cyclonic barrier technology explanation is a little cooler than what they have for the Solaris armor, but they both do their jobs, and they're cool nonetheless. Now, there are some other cool technological details that we didn't really have time to get into today, but we will give them in an episode eventually. In the meantime, if anyone is curious, I highly suggest they go into the ships and vehicles section of the Codex, because I think I could spend way too much time reading that.
Yeah, there's another hole to fall into.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So that's the SR2 in Mass Effect 2. Are we talking about the SR2 in Mass Effect 3 next time?
Yes, we are. Yeah, because it's changed once again. So the next episode that we're going to do is going to be talking all about how the Alliance came along in Mass Effect 3 and changed the ship once more.
Awesome. Awesome. And we're going to do that in just a minute during the live recording of this, two shows at the same time. So don't go anywhere. If you are listening on audio, this episode will be up later. So stay tuned for that. Sam, I know you got your streams. You're doing awesome stuff with streaming. Lots of people popping in, giving away things. I know that you just did your big giveaway, like we talked about at the beginning of the show. You have anything else coming up you want to share?
Yeah, the giveaway just finished, and so I don't have another giveaway set for, right away, not just yet. But I am thinking of more fun ways to get the community involved in the streams, and I am, of course, streaming 3 times a week. I have Mass Effect on Saturdays for Sassy Ship Saturdays. I have Dragon Age Now, my first Dragon Age playthrough, on Thursdays. And I have The Witcher. I'm going to start regularly streaming The Witcher on Mondays ahead of this show when we go live.
Nice.
When I have time. And if you'd like to catch any of my streams, you can follow me on Twitch at N7 The Legend.
Awesome. Awesome. And you guys know where my stuff is, robotsradio.net for all of my shows, all the different lore casts that I do, all the other shows on the network. And this week I'm going to talk up, you know, joining us on the Rocket Club. If you're looking at starting your own podcast, or you have a podcast already, but you feel like you could be doing better. I've started and helped a lot of shows become very successful. I have over 2 million downloads across, probably 2.5 million downloads across the shows that I do. So if you're looking for somebody to help guide you on how to do that, that's what we're there for. So robotsradio.net. And if you don't want to sign up for the Rock Club, you just want a book to read with a bunch of my advice in it, then there's a book you can get as well on the website. There's links to both of those things on robotsradio.net. So go check that stuff out. I love helping people out and seeing them succeed doing things that I love doing. I know how much I love doing this, and to have you guys there succeeding as well is awesome. So go check that stuff out. We'll be back very soon. And again, if you're on the live stream, stay tuned, because we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back for the next episode. See you guys next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.